WHYY is proudly supported by Penn Medicine. From groundbreaking discoveries to life-saving care, Penn Medicine's innovation is helping to change lives, one moment, one treatment, one patient at a time.
This is Fresh Air. I'm Terry Gross. One of NBC's hit series this year was Just Shoot Me, a comedy set in the office of a fashion magazine. My guest is one of the stars of the series, Wendy Malick. She previously co-starred in the HBO sitcom Dream On as Judith Tupper Stone, the ex-wife of the main character. That role won her 4 Cable Ace Awards for Best Actress in a Comedy Series. In Just Shoot Me, Malick plays Nina, an ex-model turned fashion editor. Here she is in a scene with the magazine's smart and down-to-earth writer Maya, played by Laura San Giacomo, and its dishy assistant to the publisher Dennis, played by David Spade. Nina has been invited to a Sting benefit, and Maya wishes she could go.
God, I love Sting. What's the cause?
Oh, it's a fundraiser to ban human cloning.
They're already raising money for that?
Well, it's never too early to jump on a good cause. I mean, otherwise you're left with something passé, like orphans.
Nina, aren't you forgetting something? Tonight's the Oscar Milos fashion show.
That's tonight?
Yeah, the messenger just dropped off your passage.
God, I can't miss the show. Milos is an important designer. On the other hand, there'll be some industry types that Stings. Although Milos is a huge advertiser, but I really do feel strongly against cloning. God, wish times like this there were two of me.
I asked Wendy Malick to describe Nina, her character on Just Shoot Me.
Someone said to me not long ago that she reminded him of Inspector Clouseau, which I quite liked, because I think there is a sort of unconscious quality that she has that allows her to do all these outrageous things without getting in as much trouble as she really should. I mean, you know, if this was a woman functioning this way in the real world, she would either have some really dreadful disease or have died from one of these things probably long ago. You really can't carry on like this indefinitely. But I think Nina is someone who just really loved the 70s, and she never quite got out of it. You know, she's really sort of an idiot savant when it comes to fashion. She's very, very good at putting things together, and but she still likes to have fun, and damn the consequences, and probably has a sort of guardian angel watching over her.
Now, Nina is a former supermodel. I'm wondering if back in your modeling days, you knew models who got too old to stay in modeling and watched what happened to them and how they handled getting older.
Yeah, it's... I have to say, first of all, that my experience as a model was an entirely positive one. I only did it for about 5 years. It was when I was living in New York and making very little money doing dinner theater and off Broadway. Had a chance to do it, and to me it was sort of a passport to see the world, and I couldn't have afforded to do it otherwise. And it's always so interesting to visit a foreign country when you're working. It makes it far more interesting to me. And I think I always saw it as a means to an end and knew that I wasn't going to be staying there indefinitely and that I did want to go back to acting, but I just wanted a chance to make some money and see the world first. But yeah, there were people. I mean, I started modeling when I was 25, which is very old. And Wilhelmina kept telling me to shut up about my age and not tell anyone. That was sort of the cardinal sin. But I did see women who were definitely on the far end of it and who hadn't really made plans, hadn't really decided where they were going to go from there. And that's probably one of the most difficult things about attractive women growing up who have an opportunity to do something that is dependent on their beauty is they don't always develop their other talents. And I think that that can be a real scary place to be.
Did you ever almost get there?
No. I was never even close to being a supermodel. I was like some mid-level model. I worked a lot, but it was never, you know, I was never sort of the A-list. I just tanned very easily, and people would send me off to do bathing suit shots in Spain or Africa or someplace fun. And I did a lot of runway modeling because I knew how to walk and do that model walk, you know, the thing where nothing moves but your shoulders, everything from the hips down. You know what I'm talking about. It's a great walk. It's like a very specific thing we learned how to do, where you pull your cheeks in and kind of have a lot of attitude, and then you just slink up and down the runway. It was really fun. I quite enjoyed it.
How did you learn how to do that?
My mother was a model. Now, she smiled a lot, so she wasn't quite as cool as we were in the 70s in New York, but she had been a model when my father proposed to her in New York, and continues to be the elder statesman model in Buffalo. She's still doing it, actually.
So you became a model at the age of 25, which you describe as pretty late for a model. How did you become one?
I was actually walking down the street, down Fifth Avenue, and someone approached me from Wilhelmina's agency and asked if I had ever modeled, and I had done it in high school. Just
wait, didn't you think they were really making a pornographic movie? And this is their come online?
This guy was so definitely not coming on to me, if you know what I mean. No, he worked with Willie. It was very clear that he was in the business, and he gave me a card and said, please call us. I think she would really enjoy meeting you, and he set up an appointment, and I went and met her the next week.
No, and Just Shoot Me, you and the other characters in the show work for Blush Magazine, a fashion magazine. What did you like and what didn't you like about the fashion magazines at the time when you were a model?
Well, what I didn't like was, in 1975 was about the time that everyone had to be all-American, blonde, and it was sort of the Christie Brinkley era. And so for sort of more exotic-looking brunettes, that it made it much more difficult. That was why I decided to go to Europe to work, because they embraced people like me a lot more openly at that time. But that was a real shift to going back to sort of much more muscular, all-American, blonde, kind of... they went for that Aryan thing there for a while. And I just wasn't cutting it at all. Yeah. Of course, it's still the problem, but you know, they are trying to create the illusion of perfection. And, you know, one of the hardest things about being a model, and you know it going in, is you're setting yourself up for huge rejection, and it's really all superficial. You go in and you are just judged by the way you look, and they sort of scrutinize every part of you. And I remember going into Wilhelmina's office one day, and she said, now I want you to go home and practice smiling, because I have a notoriously crooked smile. And she said, you know, you can get rid of that if you just practice every day, sit in front of a mirror, and just try to smile evenly. That was her advice to me. So practice smiling so I don't have a crooked smile, and never tell anybody how old I am. And I didn't do either one, so it probably didn't help my career in modeling that much.
Did she succeed in making you feel old at the age of 25?
A little bit. She said, you know, you're no spring chicken, so I wouldn't be advertising how old you are. I thought, geez, I'm 25. And I was happy that I was 25. I'd already, you know, done a lot of stuff. I'd been to school. I'd worked in Washington. I'd been on a ski team. I mean, I'd sort of lived an interesting little life up to that point. And I didn't want to pretend I was 18 or 19. I didn't think 25 was, I didn't think it was all over yet. And I looked around me, too, and watched my peers. We all did it, you know, being so obsessed with, were we pretty enough for this? You know, was our skin looking good? Did our rear ends look any bigger this week than they did last week? And what's the best hair color for me and the best haircut? And it's you can become very, very, you know, sort of narrow in your self-esteem is really tested by that.
Wendy Malick is my guest, and she's now starring in Just Shoot Me. What are some of the differences between working on cable television, as you did with Dream On, which was on HBO, and working on a network show, which you're doing now with Just Shoot Me?
Oh, so much more freedom. They never, never bothered us.
On cable.
On Dream On, yeah. I mean, we were just so left alone, and it was, you get very spoiled. You forget that most of this is decision by committee, you know, and when we were at Dream On, that was such a totally unique experience. I doubt I will ever be able to duplicate that one. It was one of those strange, odd little mixes that really just got better and better and more interesting, and I had such a lovely time on that show. And it was, we would go in and sort of collaborate on the set now and then and say, you know what, this is, what if we said this? And the writers are all right there, and they would come running in, and we'd chat about it. And there were no network people to sort of try and get it by, and you could be as outrageous, of course, as you wanted to be. Sometimes, you know, sometimes swearing is just the only thing that will do. And we were able to do that whenever it was appropriate. And I think there was probably a little more nudity on that show than was required, but that's only my point of view.
There were a lot of opportunities for little topless scenes, but you didn't have to any of those, did you?
No. I was told that if I ever wanted to, I was welcome to, but I declined. I'm a big believer in mystery. I don't need to see it all. But I guess, you know, there were 13-year-old boys who found that all extremely fascinating.
Well, on Dream On, you played the part of Judith Tupper Stone. You were the ex-wife of the main character of the series, Martin Tupper, and your second husband was like a saint. I mean, he was a combination of like Mother Teresa and
Gandhi.
Gandhi and Ted Koppel, and I mean, he was everything.
And James Taylor.
He
was everything.
Yeah, so do you have any favorite things that your husband is said to have done?
Oh, God, there was just so many of them. Like writing poetry for crack babies, and he hosted Saturday Night Live, I think, towards the end. He had written an opera. He, of course, saved the Pope. He ran in front of the Pope and took the bullet on Christmas in front of the Vatican. I think they were in a parade together. And then he made me this blouse. That was one of the lines. He flew me to Paris for lunch, and he made me this blouse. So he sewed as well. So this man was just, I so loved that I think they showed him once for about 2 seconds from the back of his head, and we all immediately knew, don't ever show him again. The poor actor who got that job thought he was in for the long run because he was talked about so much. But it was wonderful that I think we only heard his voice once, and you saw him from the back, I think, one time. And he was backlit, sort of like God.
I love the way how, you know, in that show, your first husband was always having to compare himself to your second husband, a saint.
He was, but it was very lonely being married to a saint. He was never around.
Oh, not even when you gave birth.
Not even when I gave birth, except he showed up at the last minute, backlit, as if from heaven. And, of course, we were in Bethlehem, and it was Christmas Eve, and we were in the manger. Oh, God, they did come up with some pretty fabulous things on that show.
My guest is Wendy Malick. We'll talk more after a break. This is Fresh Air. My guest is Wendy Malick. She stars as Nina, the fashion editor, in the NBC sitcom Just Shoot Me, and she played Judith Tupper Stone in the HBO sitcom Dream On. Now, let's talk about some of the things you did on your way to acting. You were part of a professional ski team. But what... What kind of ski team
are
was
you
this?
Impressed?
No, from the little I've read, it sounded like it wasn't exactly. It says something like promotional professional ski team of attractive women or something like that.
Are you going to say
what was
it
this
doesn't
about?
Sound like it was on the up and up? Was that what you were going to say? I got this job from Boston After Dark. Believe it or not, they were advertising for attractive women who knew how to ski really well and could do fashion shows and hostess cocktail parties. Well, I knew I could do fashion shows. I had done that in high school. And I figured, well, of course, I can hostess a cocktail party. I've certainly had enough to drink, and I like people. And the skiing part was the only kind of dicey part, because I grew up in Buffalo, and we're not exactly known for our ski slopes. So my skiing was fairly limited. But I can talk a good talk, so I sort of BS'd my way into this job. And as it turned out, there were five of us, and three of the women were champion skiers, and two of us kind of just really wanted to be there. And on the first day, they took us skiing. We were all wearing these matching outfits, and it was a promotional team for Look Nevada and Nordica Boots and Hart Skis, and the Carling Brewery sort of sponsored it. They were the money behind advertising it. And the very first day we went out, I realized I was completely out of my element. I was really good at falling, but I think I did like three somersaults forward and ended up fine. And they figured, well, she's not very good, but she'll get better. And I did. I improved vastly that year. And they sent us to France to do a promotional film for Air France. And we skied all over New England and then ended up in Colorado. So it was a great way to spend the winter.
And a lot of cocktail parties in between.
And fashion shows. But the problem was we always dressed and we looked like the U.S. ski team. We were always wearing red, white, and blue little matching outfits. So people would line up to watch us do these demonstrations, and the first three would be really good. Like, we'd have to do helicopter jumps off a jump, and there would be a man with a camera right there. And the first three would do these beautiful jumps. And I just remembered how to do a cheerleading jump, so I'd do the jump. But if the camera followed me, you'd see me like crash and burn as soon as I got out of the view of the camera. So it looked great on film, but I was like black and blue from the tumble I took afterwards.
Okay, Wendy Malick, another thing you did along the way to becoming an actress, you were an aide to Jack Kemp when he was a Republican congressman from Buffalo.
Mm-hmm.
How did you get briefly into politics?
I asked him on a ski lift if I could come work with him when I got out of college.
Seriously?
Yeah, our families knew each other, and we used to ski at the same resort. And when I was home from college one winter, I guess it was, we saw them out at this ski area. I think it was Kissing Bridge or Glenwood Acres or something. And he asked me how school was going and what was I going to do when I got out of school. And I said, well, I think I want to be an actress, but I'm not sure if I want to do it right away. I might travel a little. And he said, well, have you ever thought of coming to Washington? Would you like to come and work as an aide? You could come see if you like it. And I thought, what a great invitation. I may never have this one again. So I called him after I graduated and said, is that still an offer? And after that insane winter on the ski team, I decided I should get back to earth and do something on the ground. And went and spent about 4 months there.
Did your politics coincide with his?
Not at all. Not even remotely. No, I was quite liberal. I mean, I was in college from 68 to 72, and it was, as you know, a very radical time to be in school. And my father was an arch conservative, and I had always sort of felt like I was probably destined to go on the other side, but I never could quite get there until I left home. And I got fairly politicized when I was in school and was wearing a McGovern button when I showed up in Jack's office that first day. And he was fine with it. He thought it was kind of interesting and amusing, I think.
The button?
The fact that I just decided to go another way but still wanted to come and work in his office.
He did make you take off the button, didn't he?
No, he didn't. He didn't. No, he was very tolerant.
Huh.
I think it made him look more tolerant, too.
So it was after your brief stay in Washington that you became a model?
Yeah. I actually went back to New York and started acting and was making like $75 a week doing dinner theater at a club in New Jersey, I think, when that man approached me and said, would you like to model? And I thought, yeah, I think I would like to make some money here for a while. And
from modeling, you got into television. And I think early on in your TV career, you did the soap opera One Life to Live.
I was in the, when it was sort of limping towards its death, I joined them for the last,
the
last few months, yeah.
So you were on for the last gasp.
The very last gasp.
Who did you play?
Well, I was very excited. It was my first regular gig. It was on television, and I had more than five lines to say, and this was a huge deal for me. But I played Nurse Jones, and she never got a first name. And I had to wear that stupid nurse's outfit every day. And I apologize to any nurses out there, but I'm sure they know what I'm talking about. It gets really old when you want to wear beautiful things. And there you are in this little white dress with a little hat. And you don't have a first name. And basically, you're just doing the dirty work. And all I did every day was recap sort of what so-and-so said to so-and-so the day before. It was pretty grim. And I kept thinking, oh, there must be more to acting than this. Oh, please, God, give me a chance. So I was actually very happy when it said goodbye.
Now, I know that you were, for, I guess, a few episodes on Baywatch as David Hasselhoff's ex.
Uh-huh. Probably more people have seen that than anything I've done. I was in the original pilot that used to be on NBC at the very beginning. And we divorced. I mean, it was just a guest thing. I assumed that I would never be seen again. And then they had me back four or five times where once a season I would come back and Mitch, which was David's character, and I would almost get back together, but then I'd realize that he really wanted to be a lifeguard just too much, and there was no room for me. So I would go back to Ohio or wherever it is they banished me to. And I actually had such a good time on that show. It was so much fun. It's just, we just went to the beach all day. And David was always very sweet, and whenever I came on, he'd say, I love it when you come on. We always do our most serious dramatic scenes when you're here, and I get to really act. And they were jokingly referring to me as the Meryl Streep of Baywatch. So I'm not sure I should really let people know about that. But the last time I talked to the producers, they said, well, we have good news and bad news. We're thinking about going to Hawaii this year and having Mitch get married, and we figured everyone would love it if he remarried you. So that's the good news. But the bad news is then we're gonna discover that you have leukemia and you'll be dead by next season. But that never happened, so.
It's Wendy Malick. She plays Nina on the NBC sitcom Just Shoot Me. She'll be back in the second half of the show. I'm Terry Gross, and this is Fresh Air. This is Fresh Air. I'm Terry Gross, back with actress Wendy Malick. She co-stars in the NBC sitcom Just Shoot Me, which is set at a fashion magazine. Malick plays Nina, a former model turned fashion editor. Malick is a former model, too. When you started modeling, Wilhelmina of the Wilhelmina Agency told you to practice your smile because your smile was a little crooked. So did what you learned about smiling from modeling ever pay off in acting?
No. I think everything I learned from Wilhelmina, I had to unlearn. No, and it's not just her fault. I understand why she said that, but I think one of the hardest things for models who try to go into acting is just getting over yourself, getting past that obsession with how do I look, how am I being perceived at this particular moment, is this a good angle for me? When I think back on those early days of acting in New York after my modeling stint, which is when I started acting on film, so you can of course see yourself. I was horrified. It was so awful. It was really wooden, terrible acting, and it was obviously a woman who was completely self-conscious about how she was being perceived physically. And there was so little of it had to do with what was going on inside the character. It was very superficial and very indicated and not at all good. So I was just real lucky. They let me sort of bounce around until I started to learn what I was doing, started to figure it out. So a lot of the ego that you need for modeling, a lot of that sort of physical ego, you have to really strip away, I think, in order to be good at acting, if you want to be an interesting, authentic actor.
But of course now on television you're playing somebody who's a former supermodel, so mm-hmm. you have to both strip it away but use it at the same time.
Use it at the same time, but you know, I think Nina is certainly one of the goofier people on television. Yes, she's someone who, it's sort of like, yeah, you have to strip it away so that you can get to the inside of who that woman is and not be afraid to show how ridiculous she is, because I think that that's the fun of playing characters. And when I realized I was a character actress, that was the most freeing day. I was working as a guest on something and was playing actually a talk show host who was a psychologist, a radio shrink, and was accused of killing a sort of Howard Stern kind of disc jockey who was a real pig. And Richard Belzer played the disc jockey. And the character I was playing was bulimic. She was a psychologist who happened to have a terrible eating disorder, and she was out of her mind. And at one point I looked at the director and said, I have become a character actress, haven't I? And he said, yeah, doesn't it feel good? And I said, actually, yes, it's very incredibly freeing. It's not about trying to sort of stay youthful and be the babe and have to compete with all those coming along behind me. It's it allows you to just sort of be as outrageous as you want to be and sort of go any direction that's required. And that's a wonderful freedom to have.
Well, you know, it's funny for a lot of actresses who become romantic leads early in their career, say in their 20s, when they enter their 40s, they're often in deep trouble in terms of their career. But you really first became very well known in your 40s.
Yeah, that's probably true. I mean, I think I was, wow, now we're talking about my age. Oh, God, Wilhelmina would roll over in her grave. But yeah, Dream On happened, I guess, right before I turned 40. And I feel like every sort of decade for me has been so much richer and better than the one that preceded it. I've had a very, very slow and gradual ascent. And I'm very grateful for it. I think it's helped keep me balanced in a way that I'm not sure I would have been had it all happened very quickly.
Now, I knew that you and your husband do some kind of work, although I'm not sure what, in various other countries. Mm-hmm. Can you tell me a little bit about the work?
I met him. I went down with a group to Mexico to build houses for poor families in the Tijuana area. A friend had told me about this group that went down through a church, a local church here. And it's very much like Habitat for Humanity. There's another group called Corazon. They all do similar things. So I didn't know any of these people, and I thought I would go down and just see what it was and spend the weekend building this little simple house for this family. And I don't build at all, but they teach you and have you bring your tools. And I met Richard on this particular trip. And since then, we have formed this group that goes down every Thanksgiving, and it's about between 15 and 20 of us go down and spend Thanksgiving weekend, and we build a house for a family. And our Thanksgiving dinner is like a little tiny turkey sandwich, or a vegetarian version for those of us who don't partake. And instead of stuffing yourself over Thanksgiving, you go and sort of give your time and do something that can change the lives of some people who aren't as fortunate as we. And it's a pretty remarkable, gratifying way to spend Thanksgiving. We also, that first summer we were together, took motorcycles and went on safari from Kenya to Zaire to take the bikes to a small village that he had lived in as a child, to their infirmiers, their nurses, so they could get to patients in the bush. And we just went back recently and took a truck to Congo, which was formerly Zaire, to this same village where he had built a medical center, and we took them a truck because they lost their vehicles during the war.
Interesting.
Yeah, it's a great way to travel. Kind of gives you a different sort of focus, you know.
Must be interesting, too, to get out of the show business world so completely.
I get so out of it. Last night I came home and my husband said, you know, I was thinking today, you and I spend our days very differently, don't we? He's a builder and I'm off doing God knows what. And we are very, very different people. And there are times when I feel that it puts my life in complete balance, and other times when I'm not handling everything so well where it makes me completely schizophrenic. But I feel very honored to be able to pass from sort of one side of the world to the other as much as I'm able to. It's really something that I'm very appreciative of.
Well, Wendy Malick, thank you very much for talking with us.
Oh, thank you, Terry. I enjoyed it.
Wendy Malick plays Nina in the NBC sitcom Just Shoot Me.